Good afternoon. Hello, hello. I would try to talk like a pimp, but that would end badly. Really. Yes, I am honestly, genuinely that white, and that's just not going to happen. I would also like to thank South by Southwest for this being the first time I've ever had a public speaking engagement where the panelists are up here sipping champagne. So here's a toast to you guys for coming out today. Thank you very much. What's extra cool about this is, see, watch this. What you just saw was me sipping champagne, and you are not. All right, well, we got the idea for the Pimp My Nonprofit panel a year ago. It actually stems from the NetSquared DC, a gentleman by the name of Justin Perkins, originally had the idea for NetSquared out of Washington, D.C., and it was a day where everyone got together. For those of you not familiar with NetSquared, we're going to be talking about that quite a bit today, but it's a crossover between social issues and technology. So they put together a panel called Pimp My Nonprofit, and I actually work with at Happy Katie on Twitter. She's hiding over here in the front row, and she came up with the idea to have a Pimp My Nonprofit panel. So having been to the NetSquared meetings, I proceeded to invite several people, some guys, some women, not thinking anything of the fact that the panel was named Pimp My Nonprofit. So slowly but surely, the men dropped out. Yeah, you with me? So I'm having these conference calls on a panel called Pimp My Nonprofit. So, but they've been great sports, and we've got an awesome, awesome panel for you today. I'm actually really, really proud in particular of the diversity of the panel. We've got both folks inside nonprofits, outside nonprofits, both from an advocacy perspective and from a fundraising perspective and a community building. So there's going to be a lot of diversity. We're allowing 15 minutes for questions at the end, so we should be in really good shape. Now, I did promise I would ask a few questions of folks at the beginning, just so we can kind of get a feel for where the audience is at. How many of you people are either, or actually, how many of you work inside a nonprofit? Awesome. Woohoo! How many of you think it sucks that we don't have more nonprofit panels at South by Southwest? All right, bitches, how many of you are going to propose a panel next year? Come on. Yeah, see right here. For those of you not familiar with the South by Southwest panel picker process, to a large extent, it's a popularity contest. We're not right, not wrong, it just kind of is, so talk to us about that ahead of time. And maybe we can give you some pointers, because what I'd like to see next year is 5 or 6 panels in the nonprofit and advocacy sector, and I think that would really rock the house. So, yeah, give yourselves a hand for that one. All right, next question. How many of you guys are outside working with the nonprofit sector, like a vendor who works with nonprofits, et cetera? All right, so again, pretty big showing. So, see, the crowd was here at South by Southwest all along. Okay. So with that, I'm going to introduce our panelists. We're going to start. First up, we're going to have Rachel Weidinger and Michaela Hackner. Aaron, I'm sorry. Rachel Weidinger and Aaron. I wrote the names down wrong. Aaron Denny. And they're going to go through their slides in just a moment. After that, we are going to have Michaela. And then we're going to have Beth Cantor. So these are our panelists. I'm going to let them do the introductions for themselves. Also, is Guy Kawasaki. Oh, you know what? I have one more bitch. Who's here saw the Guy Kawasaki panel today? A couple of folks. Did you hear Christine Wadke say that she hated working with nonprofits? Did you hear that part? That was kind of cool, wasn't it? Yeah, I like that. So, and why? Why do we hate working with nonprofits? Well, it's because you guys are a bunch of passionate, driven people, right? You're a pain in the butt to work with. You are. But you believe in something, and you're driving towards it. So hopefully our panelists today are going to take us through some ways that we can tap into that energy. All right, so Aaron, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself? Your slides are up.
Okay, great. Hello. Can everyone hear me okay? My name is Aaron Denny. I work at TechSoup.org. I'm in the Knowledge Services team, and I work with NetSquared as a Senior Project Manager.
Rachel.
Hi, I'm Rachel Weidinger. I work with Common Knowledge. We're a web strategy firm for nonprofits. And I have a kind of crazy background. I do crazy big projects in a variety of areas. Done some green architecture stuff, worked with art museums, cultural museums. I got to work at a food and wine museum for a while, which was awesome. And I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Glad to have you. Michaela.
Hi, my name is Michaela Hackner, and I work for an international education organization called World Learning, and we do study abroad programs. We have a graduate program in international development, and we do international development programs, and I'm the director of online strategy, so I'm using all the new technologies to market our programs and to make our constituents aware of what we're doing and how they can get more involved.
Awesome. And actually, how many in the room know Beth? Yeah, she makes a lot of trouble. Okay, Beth.
Okay. I'm Beth Cantor, and I work with nonprofits and technology. I'm primarily a trainer offline, and online I write a blog about how nonprofits can use social media for social change. And enough about me and my blog. You can find me by Googling Beth.
Awesome. All right, so that's Beth. I was just passed a note by one of my fellow PIMs up here that there is a Meebo back channel. And so if you guys are on it, or if you have questions or things that the panelists aren't doing, my name's definitely not Sarah, but nonetheless, if we kind of get off track, definitely chat with us on the back channel. Actually, Michelle, if you're online, if you could help us keep an eye on that. This is Michelle from Geek Austin. I love calling people out, by the way, so if I know you, be on guard.
And just to quickly address the back channel, this is Cristalino, which is about $7, $7 to $10 a bottle. So I like it. It's good.
We're in the nonprofit sector.
Yeah. No, we got it donated.
Yeah. All right, you guys are up.
Howdy. Aaron and I are going to have a little back and forth here about some things that really inspire us.
And we hope it inspires you to not only think about new ways to use, you know, what's called Web 2.0 tools. We also call it the social web at NetSquared. How to use these with your mission in mind, particularly.
And why are we doing this? I have been excited about helping people to create the change they want to see in the world for a long time. And this whole Web 2.0 thing, I've been paying attention to. Got involved in the early stages of NetSquared, which was awesome. Because I think that oftentimes the change we need to create in the world can only come about through some pretty deep conversations. And so I'm looking for tools that allow people to engage at a deeper level and on a larger scale. So this whole thing makes me gung-ho.
Personally, I started working with technology and nonprofits in 1999. When I was invited to work for a direct marketing boutique called Benjamin & Company in San Francisco. And I started translating 25 years of Diane Benjamin's nonprofit fundraising experience into experiments online of how to raise money, how to build community. So I quickly saw the power of the web in those days. That was Web 1.0, I guess. And so I've just been passionately committed to doing this work ever since.
And now we're just going to need you to suspend your disbelief here for a minute. So there's pimping as it's usually defined, and then I'm just going to scrape that off the table and make a new definition, because I can. And we're going to talk about a definition of pimping that really gets us. First of all, we need, in a fully pimped nonprofit, to see a user-oriented experience. But that's not enough. We also want to see a cause-based design, or mission-based, if you prefer, cause/mission. And then we want to layer in there some tools for change, and some ways, advocacy tools, and ways for people to actually take action and create the change they want to see. So a fully pimped nonprofit in our world, user-oriented experience, cause-based design, tools for change. And we have a couple of case studies today. Nonprofits, they're mostly based in the US. And we very much are interested in expanding this list. It is not exhaustive. These are just some that we're real excited about right now. that's what I'm talking about. Have you guys met ilovemountains.org? Yes. Good. Yes. So we think some of the pimped things about ilovemountains.org are its ability to draw connections for you. This is organizations across Appalachia working together to end mountaintop removal. 7 grassroots organizations across 5 states coming together using technology to inform and involve. And if you haven't been there yet, go there soon. Input your zip code, and it will show you who your power is provided by and map that right back. Yay, mashups. Map that right back to where the fuel that supplies the power is coming from and show illustrate that connection for you. But the thing that makes me giddy is that it also allows you to see your impact. This is the visual representation of the impacts of one of their large users, Woody. And all of those dots, I don't know if you can see this clearly, but there's 2 colors of dots here, pinkish ones, which are actions from Woody's friends, people he's brought into the network, and the blue dots are donations. A nice network user. Good job there. This site was produced by Matthew Gross, who's an online organizer, former director of internet communications for the Howard D. campaign, working with Appalachian Voices. And it's pimped, yo.
I said we weren't going to try to speak in pimp voices. Are you going to be the rebel with that one?
That's... otherwise, I'd be speaking in a horrible French accent. So I'll just
One other comment on this slide. For the developers in the house, there's a Java library called Processing, processing.org, which is an open source where if you're a developer, you can do this type of visual. It does take a developer, in my opinion, but check it out. It's processing.org. I think it's processing.org. I know the language. Is it? Okay. I'm seeing a head nod.
Nice. So what really gets us here? You can visualize, you can have visualized for you your connection to the problem and then follow that up with seeing your impact. I think that's very powerful.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the video that we saw this morning a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
And was it Invisible Children? Yeah, so we also, I mean, when we talk about these values, really, we also want to think about, you know, this isn't the only example, right? There's, you know, Invisible Children has done this with their site. When you're thinking about it for yourself, you really want to, for your own nonprofit, you really want to say, okay, what is the problem? How is it tied with my mission inherently? And how can I, you know, use these tools to create an impact that I wouldn't be able to otherwise? Integrating not only the web channel, but mobile and offline as well, so.
All right, then. This is another campaign. Oh, and I should be clear here. The I Love Mountains campaign is one that I'm inspired by. I had nothing to do with it other than that I have taken some actions on it. But this is a campaign that Common Knowledge worked on, the next one, the IFAW campaign. 3 decades ago, a group of citizens joined together against the seal hunt. And the campaign... this is the 1997 seal hunting season campaign.
That campaign is actually against hunting seals, right?
Correct.
Just checking.
Thank you
just
for clarifying. Checking. That's an important point.
It does sound funny. It's a campaign for seal hunting. It just, it's right out there.
You got me there. So tiled in the seal image here, little tiny pixel-like objects, each one of those tiles is the user profile of someone who came onto the site and took an action. To join this campaign, you upload a little bit of personal info, avatar, photo. There's an opportunity for an audio message. And then there's a whole support community around this with podcasts, blogging, MySpace profiles. There was the PR wrap. But what really makes me think this has some aspects of pimpiness is the ability to see the voices and the passion of the people who support the campaign. I'm pretty gung-ho about being able to see the humanity in any network that you're participating in, and I like this. And Bob here says, nobody likes this, except for a few sick, cruel people. And he finishes with, the rest of us, the vast majority of people who are aware of this practice, are appalled by it. Please help us stop it. So it has space in it for the individual's perspective and why they're involved in the change. There were almost 100,000 community members, 98,000. The fundraising over the year before was up 30%, with adding these layers of personal participation in it. So we had successes in a couple of areas there. And this is one of many examples that are out there right now. I use this one because you can ask me more questions about it because I know more about it. That is combining advocacy, fundraising, and community building together. This is happening lots of places now, and I'm really excited about that. And I hope to see it a lot more. Pimp it.
I would just add one thing is that I think the power of the voice is like it's in their own, in the user's own words. You know, it's not paraphrasing or, you know, speaking for anyone else. It's really, you know, enabling people to speak for themselves, translate on their own. So. Yeah, Youth Noise. Yeah, Youth Noise. I worked at Youth Noise for a short amount of time as a senior product manager there. We did a initiative called Right to Learn. It's actually righttolearnca.org. And the power of that project really it was about reforming education with youth voices being involved. And we went around and we asked youth to participate in the year of education reform that Governor Schwarzenegger has said is 2008 and tell their stories. And they did this in text. They could, you know, text in their story. They could come on our site, they could record a video or audio of their story, or they could write their own story on our site. In the few short months that it has been live, it's gotten almost 800 stories submitted. I think that's pretty remarkable, actually. And it was a statewide initiative, and the top five compelling stories were put into a report that is now with the governor's office and is, you know, actively working to create change. It's youth-powered voice, you know, their own stories. So.
Yeah, in particular,
okay.
I need to really lean into the mic.
I will make love to the mic.
So we're going to quickly go through a March of Dimes campaign that's been in existence for a long while. It got started in 2004, I believe. And they're also doing a lot of new, exciting things that were delightfully covered in the last panel. I'm a big fan of Share Your Story as a really killer example of how you can extend the delivery of your mission-based services with the magical interweb. Share Your Story is an online social network for parents of babies who have problems and are spending time in the neonatal intensive care units. It allows voices to reach each other of people who are having a hard time and similar experiences, and they can support each other. It's super simple, and I'm so glad it exists, and there's an opportunity here to do lots more things like this and help people hear each other and give support. And ask hard questions. I encourage you to go and check out the site and read what's happening. Very powerful. And this is a great example of an organization delivering services by holding space. They've created and supported this vessel for conversations to happen in, and good stuff is happening in it. Yay. Thanks.
Yay.
Can I get a yay? And as a longtime museum, complete total museum nerd, what the Brooklyn Museum is doing is awesome. So museums, in the usual standard of things, historically, they're like a locked jewel box. with treasures inside. And the Brooklyn Museum is one of the museums that's definitely leading the way in blowing that apart. There's a trend. It's not a new trend. It's been going on for a while. But they are open in lovely ways. And they have a combination of blogging, podcasting, the lectures. Often museums are content generators. They have lots of scholarship going on, but for a long time, that's only been available in scholarly journals, the printed member magazine, or if you actually show up at the lecture. They're doing a fantastic job of repurposing content and taking the locks off of it and letting it free. One of the little things that I love about this is, that's my embarrassing Facebook profile, that I can choose to say, this is an object in the collection of the Brooklyn Museum that I identify with. I want to show people. You can put together a little slideshow. It's a great app for getting the collection off of the website and out into the world, and allowing users to help promote. It's a great tool for evangelism, and they're increasing access at the same time.
So just to clarify what you're saying, there's a Facebook application we can install and share artwork from the Brooklyn Museum. Now, is that something anybody in the room can do? Is that an open Facebook app, or yep. Is it one that was specific? It is?
It's open, and it's open in another way, too. They developed it and then asked other museums to come on board. So now there are a menu of different collections of art that are available there. Pimped.
There we go. All right. Next up, we have...
We're just going to talk about NetSquared a little bit. So NetSquared's mission is to spur the responsible adoption of social web tools by social benefit organizations. Relationships are really what nonprofits thrive on. And so these tools really are about maintaining, building, expanding these relationships. And NetSquared has been around for 3 years. This is the third year. And this year, we're having a mashup challenge. So the purpose of the mashup challenge, it has three parts. Social innovators can submit their applications for their ideas, for the data that they want to bring together. And then the second part is we have engaged engineers and project designers to come together and give feedback and help social innovators define clearly the action that needs to happen to move their projects forward. And then third, self-organizing to actually develop them, make them happen. So the deadline for submitting a...
What do you get if you win? If you're a nonprofit and you enter the mashup challenge and you win first place, do you get a pat on the back or what do you get?
Well, we have $100,000 in cash prizes.
So they're giving away $100,000 to nonprofits who enter the mashup challenge.
Yeah. Well, not enter.
Well, if they
so
win.
If you win. So
well, no, but I mean, the winners have to be a subset, right?
So there's,
I'm so there.
No. So March 14th, this Friday, is the last day to submit your idea. There'll be voting. So the community votes on the top 20 projects. And then on 3/24, we're announcing the winners. And then everyone who is a winner is invited to our conference, which is... 5/27 and 28 in San Jose. So the $100,000 will be divided amongst the winners, like it was last year. So,
And who won last year?
A lot of people won last year, but the number one winner was, oh my God, why did I just blank on that?
Yeah, the top two. One of the winners last year at the NetSquared challenge was FreeCycle. I don't know if you guys are familiar with FreeCycle, but think of it as Craigslist. They send an email out about stuff you want to give away for free, and somebody else comes and picks it up. So it's kind of like, welfare for the rest of us, I guess. I don't know. But it's a phenomenal idea. People give away like cars and all sorts of stuff. And the number one winner last year was
MapLight. Yeah,
MapLight, sorry. MapLight.org. If you aren't familiar with MapLight.org, you click on your legislator, and then you click on where they got their money, and then you click on how they voted on issues where the money cares. So you can see, like, if you go right now and look up Obama or Clinton, and you'll see where they're getting the money and how they voted on associated bills. It was like 50,000. So that's pretty cool stuff, right?
They also have just developed an open API and widgets and things like that too with that money. So that's so very cool. Awesome. So, thank you.
One other word on how many people here are in a NetSquared meetup in some city? A couple of folks? Okay. Do we have any D.C. folks here? All right. Yeah, we completely stole your idea, man. You guys blogged it. We completely, it was great. No, it really is good. And again, thanks to Justin Perkins. I appreciate that. Now with that, we're going to turn it over to our next speaker.
Hi, everyone. Like I said before, my name is Michaela Hackner, and like many of you, I am the sole techie in a large nonprofit doing something other than technology. And I'm sure a lot of you have to be the technology evangelist within your organization, and it's not always easy. And in order to kind of help make the process a little bit more smooth, I've come up with a list of things to keep in mind before you decide to choose a new technology to pimp your nonprofit with or design a new campaign in order to make sure that you have success. So, like I said, there's several internal factors that are necessary to ensure that you will be successful with the technology you choose and that your organization will adopt it and use it to its full extent. The first one is buy-in, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. This is not only just proper funding to accomplish your goal, but also internal ownership of the technology, because if people in your organization are not as invested in the technology as you are, then it's unlikely that the technology will succeed because there's not enough momentum going. Also, you need to make sure you include your IT department if you have one. Some of us don't, but if you do, it's really great to keep them involved every step of the way because they're your friends, and they can make sure to help you manage your resources better and help support you as you're rolling out the new technology or campaign.
Now, that's kind of an exception. I think most nonprofits have extra money in the IT department usually, so do you find that happen?
What did you say? Well, I have an IT department, and I know some organizations do, but I think it's really good. Even if you have, you know, someone who comes every afternoon to your nonprofit, you know, to provide, you know, technology support for you guys, it's really good just to keep them in the loop of what you're trying to do. Transparency really is the best policy, I think. The next thing is really that's really important is having technical resources, because if you are a small nonprofit or even a big one, if you have changes that you need to make within the technology, whether it's swapping out a picture or changing text or even troubleshooting something when it doesn't show up right in a browser, you need to plan for this in advance, whether having someone on your staff or having someone stand by to support you. We just launched a new website and my organization recently, and you know, we wouldn't have been able to do it if we hadn't had certain people on standby to address certain issues, and one of them was Convio, so thanks Convio for helping us out. That was great.
What is your website?
My website is www.worldlearning.org. The next thing that's really important is having human resources and interest in the technology, and this goes back to buy-in. If your staff isn't familiar with the technology and they don't know how to use it, it's unlikely that you'll have a lot of success with it. You need to make sure that it's something that's accessible to them and isn't, you know, you're not, you know, stepping beyond what you guys are actually capable of doing. I think that's all I have for that one.
You're going to have to explain that picture.
The picture is a moto driver in Cambodia, and this is what they do on their break. They take a nap in the sun. So, yeah. All right, next thing that's really important is time. And as a person in a nonprofit, you probably wear a lot of hats. And as a person not in a nonprofit, you should be aware that people in nonprofits wear a lot of hats. In that case, it's really important when you are using a new technology that you have staff within your office in the nonprofit that is dedicated to contributing content to your technology, supporting your technology, looking at a Facebook page, updating pictures on Twitter or on Flickr, looking at the Twitter feed, whatever. But if it's not really if it's not really written into someone's job description, it's unlikely that it will happen. And so that needs to go back to working with management and making sure that they're, you know, they've bought into what you're trying to do. It's very important because it can't be ancillary to somebody else's job. Otherwise, it just won't happen. This goes for people and organizations that are... This hat keeps falling off. Okay. Thank you. All right. So Pardon the hat head. So this goes back to any organization that's working internationally, which I think a lot of nonprofits are. And my organization, you know, we have offices all around the world, but we are an American NGO. And we recently tried a blog pilot trying to get students on some of our study abroad programs to blog from different countries. And the program was a really great success, but one of the things that was difficult was even though these students were in areas where they had a lot of access to internet, their schedules were way too busy, or the connection was too slow to log on to Typepad. So, I mean, I know that this is something that you probably do consider when you choose a technology, but we never anticipated that, you know, students who are in big cities, you know, in Europe and, you know, and parts of Asia, we're not going to be able to get onto the internet to update a blog regularly. So maybe in that case, a blog might not be the best decision. The next thing is not entirely necessary, but is really helpful, and this is proximity to some of the people who are going to be contributing content. Again, with the blog project that we did, none of the students ever met each other, and a lot of them weren't very familiar with, you know, working in a virtual world. And in that case, it would have been better if we had had a meetup beforehand before they all went to different countries and talked about what the blog was for and, you know, really create some community within the blog. You know, this isn't always necessary, but a lot of people who work in nonprofits aren't, you know, in tune with technology the way that we are. They're not living in a virtual world half the time. So it's very hard to create that sense of community by just putting a bunch of people together in one place, you know, virtually, if they've never had that sort of experience before. The next thing is this project replicable? And as in many organizations, nonprofits aren't any different in that people often leave. And if you're the one person who, in your organization that's running this technology or, you know, running the campaign, you need to make sure that when you leave that there's someone there who's able to take your place. They need to be able to have the same skill set, they need to be able to keep the momentum going, and they have to keep championing what you're trying to do, because, you know, this stuff is only possible when you've got the momentum going and you just keep running with it, and you need to make sure that you've got that contingency plan in case something changes in your staffing. The next thing is empowerment. Now, technology is supposed to, you know, pimp your nonprofit and make your cause more visible and reach out to more constituents, but you also need to make sure that the technology empowers your staff, right? It needs to help them become more creative. It needs to be something that they can own and that they can run with and be creative with. And again, like the same momentum going, because the more people you have in your organization that buy in and are excited about this technology, the more it can spread and be successful. So you really need to make sure that everybody can feel empowered by the technology as opposed to be intimidated by it, which I think happens frequently. And I think this is my last one. Yeah. Capacity. You know, I'm sure a lot of you have been at South by Southwest all week and all weekend and are really inspired and want to go out and do something big. And I would encourage you to do that, you know, get involved with as much as you guys can, you know, you can handle. But also remember that you really should make realistic decisions when you're thinking about your technology. Because if you don't have the, you know, all of these above factors ready to back you up and to help you become successful, then it's unlikely that, you know, you're choosing the coolest flashy thing will actually be successful, because you won't have everything else, all your ducks in a row. So, you know, technology isn't about the kind that you choose, but what you can be the most creative with and run with and, you know, and really make a difference with. So it could be, you know, something as simple as a blog, you know, versus creating some sort of, you know, crazy mashup that does a lot of cool stuff, which is definitely awesome as well. But if, you know, if you're an organization that has 5 people, then it's better to stick with something that you can do really, really well and make a statement with. So good luck pimping. And if you have any further questions about or want to commiserate about being like the sole techie in your organization, I'd love to talk with you.
Just also, we've got a schedule of 15 minutes for Q&A at the end, and we can also switch to a series of questions as backup where we can have the panelists go through. So the 15 minutes, is that going to be enough for you guys on Q&A, or do we want to switch format now? Because we're hearing different things on Twitter and Meebo. Who wants to switch to Q&A? Okay, who wants to stay with Beth's awesome presentation coming up and then stick with 15? All right. Yeah, it's a little intimidating to have Beth camp. You notice we put her last, right? We're like... Or like, and also we gave her champagne last.
Right, right.
And pretty much we've been completely biased against her in every way, shape, and form. I do want to explain one thing real quick about the panel. With Rachel on this end, Rachel's an outside consultant that works with nonprofits. Now, Agent Handy, who I have a difficult time calling Aaron, Agent Handy here actually works inside of NetSquared and TechSoup. So she works in a nonprofit and community building. Is that a fair description?
I'm a project manager, actually.
Okay, project manager. That's an ambiguous term. Nobody knows what that means. Okay. Now, Michaela, you also work inside an organization with a ton of IT resources.
A nonprofit.
Yes. And now, Beth, you are an outside complete troublemaker. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a wired fundraiser, extra-organizational activist.
Okay.
Unencumbered by any of the problems that Michaela has to suffer through as the lone techie in the organization.
And but one last thought on Beth.
She's been there.
But I've been there.
Yeah.
We voted her most likely to go over on time. So with that.
Right. So now I have my challenge.
Now you have your challenge.
Okay. Honestly, I'm on the board of the organization that has benefited. So. So I'm not totally an outsider. I'm not an alien. So I'm going to give a little talk called Giving Good Poke, and I finally had the right microphone. But what I'm really going to talk about is personal, socially networked fundraising campaigns. And I'm going to tell a few stories about my most recent campaign where I raised $93,000 for Cambodian orphans. Woo! Coming in first place in America's Giving Challenge for Global Causes. Woot, woot! Okay. I've run 5 of these campaigns, and along the way, I've learned what tools work, what strategies work, what motivates people to donate, and what really ticks them off. And also along the way, I have kind of nurtured and developed a community of people that care about children in Cambodia. For the America's Giving Challenge, the organization that benefited was the Sharing Foundation. It's a nonprofit. It's all volunteer. I'm on the board. And they have a mission that matches my passion. And they're very, and I must also tell you that the board has little old ladies with sneakers who have AOL accounts. But they trust that, you know, and after dealing with a lot of resistance, they were willing to jump over the cliff with me. Especially after the first campaign raised $50,000, they said, Beth, we'll do anything you say.
Hey, depending upon what kind of sneakers, that could be pimp.
White sneakers. Tennis sneakers. Okay, so let's talk about the America's Giving Challenge. It was launched by the Case Foundation and Parade Magazine. And the idea here was that any individual could go out there and champion a cause. And the next idea was that you had to use these new social media tools, Facebook Causes, a widget from WidgetBox, or a charity badge from Network for Good. It was a 50-day campaign, and the idea here wasn't the amount of money you raised, but the number of donors. So whoever got the highest number of donors would win $50,000. I'm sorry. $50,000. So the contest opens on December 13th at 3 p.m. So what happens at 3:01 p.m.? I open my kimono. Okay, slowly. What does that mean? I went out to my blog and I put together some initial strategy ideas, some questions, and I asked my community, you know, what do you think? Now, this was really scary because all my readers are people who work for nonprofits, and they could have, like, told me the wrong information, or they could have read my blog, and they could have gone in the contest and tried to beat me. And I said, to heck with it, every single campaign that I've done this, and it's helped me be successful, because all my readers are smarter than me, and they told me things I didn't even think about. And second, it helped me identify people who helped me do this, because I didn't do it alone. There's a whole community behind it. So open the kimono. Okay, let's talk about strategy. The most important thing is to make it personal. Okay, you know, you're my friend, I'm gonna ask you for $10, and you're gonna give it to me because, well, maybe you like me. you really like me, so you'll give me 10 bucks, you know, that's two Starbucks. And, you know, there's a whole theory behind this of likability, and if you read that book, Psychology of Influence, it'll tell you all the details that I'm not going to go into right now. But you're going to give it to me because you know me, you trust me, or we've had some kind of shared experience related to the cause. You have an adopted kid from Cambodia, or you're interested in poverty reduction, or you're a reader of my blog and you appreciate me. Okay, so let me give you an example of how I go out and talk about this cause, because I don't give the organizational speech. Cambodia is in my heart, and it's in the hearts of my family. That's my family. And it's in our hearts because it brought us our children. That's my daughter Sarah and my son Harry when they were in the orphanage managed by the Sharing Foundation. That's them today. They're happy, they're healthy, they have medical care. And as my son likes to point out, we have our own laptops and Creative Commons t-shirts. But there are other kids that are not so lucky. And those are children that are still in Cambodia, like Sanin, who is an orphan and who has to take care of her younger sisters. And she can do that because she has a job in a sewing shop, that a program sponsored by the Sharing Foundation. She's also able to go to school and send her sisters to school, which is an important route out of poverty, also because of a program sponsored by the Sharing Foundation. And that's why I'm very passionate about this cause and why I will do anything, because it helps those children, which is at the roots of where my children came from. Will it scale? Does this scale? You know, does passion scale? Well, this is an old activism theory called the ladder of engagement. I'm sure most of you are familiar with it. It's kind of a hack that I put together of several colleagues' work. We've been talking about it on Flickr and on our blogs. But basically that people play different roles in your campaign and that they go through different stages of involvement and willingness to do things on your behalf. And what's really important here to make it scale is what the personal fundraiser does, which is called network weaving, to help bring through people through these different stages and get them to the ultimate godlike level where they will instigate and evangelize on your behalf. Okay, I had a strategy of storytelling, and it was 3 points. The first thing, and there's research that backs it up, I wanted to tell stories about those kids, because donors are more likely to donate if they know about the kid, not the numbers. Second, I wanted to tell stories about what people were doing to help, how they moved up that ladder of engagement. And third was, if I prattled on and asked people for $10, and I constantly talked about Cambodian orphans on my blog, I would really tick off my readers. My readers are people who are interested in learning how to use this stuff, and I write about lessons learned. So I embedded in every story a lesson learned about how to use these tools. Okay, I mentioned the 3 R's of network weaving, and this is for this is a salute to Cog Dog Blog, because here come the dog pictures. Okay, I'm just going to whiz through these quickly. The 3 R's we have: relationship building, very important. A colleague at a nonprofit told me, that's the black hole of social networking, relationship buildings. It's not just an email blast. You're getting to know people. Rewards. Rewards are very important. There's the virtual equivalent of the PBS coffee mug, and I'll show you some examples. And, of course, reciprocity.
you did not just show us that slide. What?
Right. Yes, I did. I've showed it in many places. But people will do onto you as you have done onto them. And there's a wonderful picture in Flickr that I chose not to use to illustrate that point. But I didn't just go ask people to do things. I give away a lot of things. I help people. I do random acts of kindness. And that's part of the relationship building, and people respond. Okay, so elements of this 50-day campaign, all these things work, but in different ways. So I'm just going to show you one example, fun. So what's more fun than a birthday party? So I decided on my birthday, I started hinting around with my status on Facebook, and I actually got some gifts, you know, donate $10 to the campaign. Then I put out a challenge on my blog. Can I get 51 people to donate $10 for my 51st birthday? And again, storytelling. I showed a picture of me. I showed how the orphans celebrate their birthdays in the orphanage. I put it out on Facebook, and if you notice, I tag people in my note, and I didn't just randomly tag, you know, five of my 800 friends. I tagged the people who I had found who were really passionate about this cause, and some of these people I haven't even met. Some of them I just met on social networking sites, but I asked them, activated them to go out and help me with this challenge. My kids went on YouTube and made a video, and my son saying, we don't have credit cards, so we can't donate, so it's up to you. I tested four different versions of the video using humor, passion, the different qualities, and this humor seemed to work best, seemed to motivate getting the credit cards out. So cute kids work. Okay, so the birthday cards started coming in on Facebook. Even the guy who I just knocked out of the competition, first place, wished me happy birthday. Then the blog posts came from my different networks, from N10, Holly sitting there, from NetSquared. And I think this is very clever because we pimped two causes in one blog post. I was also pimping the P-Fund Friday in that post, and that was from Britt Bravo. I even got a Bethcast. I'm very involved with the screencasting community, and Christine made me did a visual analysis of the engagement levels of all the photos I did. And I mean, that was a gift in itself. I didn't need the $10, but still, I wanted the donation. So the birthday wishes continued to come. I had actually, for my 50th birthday, did a Flickr remix contest. So there was lots of ridiculous photos out there that people could have fun remixing on my behalf. And then I started to use Twitter. And I tried to, you know, get people to click through, you know, and, you know, naked pictures, you know. Always with a link to the donation. Again, the ladder of engagement. So what were the results? I got 125 people to donate, 142 birthday wishes, and 180 views on See Me Naked photo. What does that say? I'm whipping through. Okay, so we had 20 more days to go, and at this point in the campaign, I had to pace it. It was a marathon. Kept up with the stories, 3Rs, the ladder of engagement. I used urgency to stay in the top of the leaderboard, and then there was an offline component because we did have the little old ladies in tennis shoes. We had to get them working. So I told lots of stories. I brought lots of T-shirts over to one trip and distributed them to the orphanage while I was helping some bloggers. So I connected stories about the T-shirts and the orphans, and I had a lot of T-shirt stories, lots of them. And each one of them was connected to different communities. There was a lot of this going on. So, you know, I would blog something, the bloggers who helped me would go out, it would be Twittered, and all with, you know, getting people to make that donation. Again, the 3Rs of network weaving. You know, as you can see, I have a relationship with Creative Commons. I didn't just ask them to message out to their 20,000 people in the cause, because over 18 months, I've done things for them, they've done things for me. I'm wearing Creative Commons badge right now. So again, that's like the element of relationship building. At one point, I fell out of the lead, so I did a Twitter rally. And this was just getting people to retweet it and donate, and it moved us back into first place and energized the campaign. And you don't want to do this kind of thing too often because it gets annoying. You sound like a PBS pledge drive. I'm sorry if Andy Carvin's in the room. An NPR pledge drive.
Question, Beth.
Yes.
You're working on lots and lots of things. About either how many hours a week or what percentage of your energy would you say you were dedicating to this?
It's one of those things where you have to dedicate a lot of energy in the beginning, and then it tips the tuna because other people get going. But in the beginning, I was spending 1 or 2 hours a day, and a volunteer effort.
Right.
And then later, I was not spending as much time. So this is like an example of some Twitter solicitation techniques. And it gave me a lot of information about, you know, what keeps people from donating. And one of the problems was that we didn't have PayPal integration. And geeks don't want to get out of their chairs to donate with a credit card and find their wallets. Again, making it easy is important. Offline, online strategies. I didn't know this, but Ed was at the GOT Social conference, and we were in a slideshow. And I didn't know this until somebody tweeted me. And then I tweeted Ed to take your laptop to the parties and get people to donate.
So just to put that in perspective, we're done public speaking. We're at the pub drinking beer. And she's asking me to run around the pub and get people to donate $10 online with my laptop to Cambodia for Kids.
I know. It was
a challenge even for me. I love her, but you know.
And that's a great demonstration of, you know, you have to temper your passion. You know, you have to, like, it's, you know. And this and I did have the old lady brigade out taking their laptops out to the Rotary meetings, to the bingo games, and getting people to donate. Okay, so we're in the final stretch of the campaign, and we're in first place. Life is good. But I had to get on a plane and fly down here to Austin, Texas. I had to do a keynote. I was offline for like 8 hours, and I was like really upset. I was asking people on the plane to donate. We get off, I'd switch planes, I'd open up my laptop, and they'd contribute. I got 6 donors that way. And I was Twittering people, you know, can you do, you know, what have you done? What have you done? So I land in Austin, and oh my God, we're in fifth place. Ow, no way. I've worked way too hard. So I the old ladies put this message out. I put it on my blog, and the network responded. Well, there's supposed to be the Star Wars theme there, because it's really funny, because my son thought the Star Wars theme would be right. But the network started to respond. All those hours that I initially put in at the beginning were starting to pay off. They set up a fan club for me on Facebook. People were Twittering me saying, I'm not going to let you lose. All those kids I gave t-shirts to, they took off to the hi-fi social network that I'm not even on, and they started recruiting for me. The bloggers came out, desperately asking, saying it nicely. Somebody said it with love. She wanted to activate her community with love. And this blog post made me really happy because it told me that the storytelling, like, worked. Because she was writing about how everybody was getting sucked into the drama of us losing and wanted to help Beth win. I even had people cursing on my behalf. I had never met him, and I've read the title, and this is at 3 a.m. I'm almost done.
Can you read that real quick for the folks in the back who don't have good eyesight?
Beth Cantor, give it up, bitches, now. Click on the fucking link and donate the $10, goddammit. There's kids starving in Cambodia, and you just had a fancy macaroni and cheese lunch. What the fuck? Donate.
And it goes on.
Okay. Plus, I didn't realize this, but he's a VC, angel investor, and he promised a third quarter lunch with anybody who could go out and get 10 other people to donate. So it was really awesome. And so we moved up. I Twittered the last bit, like the last hour, like sports scores, you know, going. We almost crashed the server, but we won. We came in, we kicked ass. And the wooting and the poking went all over Facebook. And finally, the kids in Cambodia pressed their palms together and said, in Cambodian, Agun, which stands for thank you.
Awesome. Beth Cantor, ladies. Actually. All right, we were listening to Meebo, we were listening to Twitter. We've got a couple of different things. I've got a series of questions, but I thought that I would open it up to the audience. We have a mic there where we can address questions if you want to call out a particular panelist or just put it before the panel. Does anyone have any questions for us? How many people are thinking, I'm like 5 minutes away from a beer if this guy will stop talking?
How many people want a glass of champagne?
Yeah, bring the champagne we got. Yes, sir. Right,
hey, guys. Quick question for you. So, first of all, it's awesome what you guys are doing and doing it on your own, and it's great, and really acting as agents of change, I guess, as it pertains to the social media and as it pertains to charity. So that's awesome. I run an interactive agency out of New York, and one of the things that we're doing is actually donating parts of our time to charitable organizations, especially as it pertains to specializing within social media. And I wondered, you know, what you guys felt about, you know, kind of pulling on the or drawing on the resources of ad agencies out there that typically get paid to get people to talk about certain things and get people to connect to each other, about leveraging their resources and helping out with causes. And if you think that's happening enough, or you know, maybe some recommendations for agencies that are looking to do that kind of thing.
Let me see if I can rephrase that. So do you guys know of any nonprofits that recommend engaging with ad agencies to promote your causes? Is that a fair?
Yeah, sure.
Was that an offer for pro bono services? Because I think I can hook you up.
Maybe. Maybe.
I know,
I mean, we're working with like different models of figuring out exactly how to do that and obviously stay in business. But I think it's important. I think, you know, having those skill sets, there should be a responsibility to give back. And I just wondered what you guys' point of view was.
Yes.
Okay. I also think you can see, like, with YouTube launching the nonprofit thing. that media is becoming more and more and more important, and doing it well and doing it right, and you know, knowing, you know, like I was talking this morning with Rachel, I was saying, you know, pimping, we're not asking you to go on the corner and do whatever it takes to make your money. We're saying, find out your best asset and work it, you know, and that's your mission. So
it's more of a challenge for me.
I would strongly encourage your firm to consider implementing some kind of system around how you give away your services. I worked early in my career with Wild Oats, and they have a really fantastic, strong giving policy. So if you're working with an agency that usually has for-profit clients, put together a nice way to give things away.
Volunteer contracts are great. You can find them on TechSoup.org. We have templates for you.
Next question.
Actually, I just wanted to respond to that last question. Just this week, AustinProBono.org launched. If you're from Austin.
And what is Austin? What does that do, ma'am?
It matches up Austin nonprofits with Austin graphic designs, advertising agencies, whatever. So it might be a good
very cool.
template for somebody else. And I'm a big fan of TechSoup and Beth. I'm Dale from Austin Freenet.
Thank you.
Austin Pro Bono, all stuck together, .org.
Hi, my name is Ben Rigby from Mobile Voter. First of all, Beth, you're the pimpest of nonprofit tech people in the in the world. Amazing, inspiring. There's this debate about will nonprofits exist in the future when ad hoc groups of people can use the web to connect with each other and create social change? Like Beth, your project. I mean, you're just you. You're not a nonprofit, and yet you raise more money than most nonprofits can dream about for their causes. What is the future of nonprofit organizations look like, and how does it integrate with kind of the social web in terms of young people being able to get together and do amazing things by themselves without a hierarchical organization? And I also, that's it.
I don't know the answer to that because I don't have a crystal ball, but I can tell you, you know, I'm on the board of this organization, and I, along the way, found on Facebook a Cambodian kid who's here who just found me because he was interested in helping. And he was at a university, and he went out across campus and was canvassing all his friends. And I just helped him. You know, I gave him content. He got bummed out because a few people said no. And so I was, you know, supporting him. So what I would suggest is that the future you're talking about maybe isn't there, but maybe in the interim, that you can work, you can find people who are probably passionate about whatever your organization does, and you can work with them. So maybe go that route.
Awesome, thanks. Next question.
I know this panel is U.S. based. I work for Witness, an international organization, and we launched the hub. .witness.org. I'm just going to pimp that for a second.
Well, that's a great program.
What's the name of the website
hub,
again?
Well, it's witness.org, but our latest project is hub.witness.org. And we train people to do videos on the ground. We don't actually speak for other groups. We let them speak for themselves. But we have a lot of challenges, both technically and language-wise, and then also doing advocacy on the international level in terms of getting our core partners to embrace online advocacy. But in terms of, like, the U.S. supporting human rights groups that are international, I'm curious if you guys have worked on that at all and what your challenges have been and what your experiences are.
Michaela, do you have anything for that one?
I've spent some time volunteering over in another country. I lived in Cambodia and Kenya for 2 years, almost 2 years. And yeah, that's how I met Beth. I highly recommend people who have technical expertise and, you know, want to give back to take some time and volunteer for these organizations because they need your help. You know, there's definitely a lot of people overseas who are doing that. Most of the people I met were actually Americans, Australians, Europeans, South Americans, all over there trying to help provide support to nonprofits. I think that what we need is a way to organize people to do this, to get people to the right places when they're needed, and to get that, you know, transfer of knowledge so that people can take this, you know, take the knowledge and run with it and and not be dependent upon external contributors.
I just want to point you to two resources. I don't know if you're familiar with Ethan Zuckerman, his blog, My Heart is in Africa, something. I'm sorry, I had too much champagne. But Google Ethan Zuckerman, and he wrote a post back in February that was a case study on the Burma monks campaign that was done in Facebook, and there's some really interesting lessons learned there. And then Mary Joyce at Idealog, she captures information about how international human rights groups are using social media tools to advocate for different causes. And those are two really good resources.
All right, let's take this last question, then I've got a couple of wrapping up comments. It'll be very brief. So,
hey, this is David Neff. I'm with the American Cancer Society. My question for each of the panelists is, you guys talked a lot about donations and you know, Beth, your story, and then we heard about mashups and stuff, but can each of you speak to recruiting volunteers and actually getting, like, people maybe off Twitter to actually come and volunteer and just kind of speak to how you guys are talking with volunteers and recruiting volunteers in that Web 2.0 space or whatever you want to call it?
Rachel, you want to start, and we'll just kind of go down this way? Okay. Erin?
NetSquared is launching, or has launched, the Innovator Support Network. We'll be launching an enhanced platform to help support this in the future this year. But it is all about the people, and it's about actionable, you know, things that you can do now, you know, and now that leads up to something bigger, you know. So... I would just say, you know, blogging really helps. Knowing your community and knowing what your community wants to do. Those are just the things off the top of my head. I don't want to go on and on. So,
I would go back to one of the points Beth made, and you know, when I've worked for nonprofits overseas, it's been very informal. All of my friends followed my blog. They knew what I was doing. They cared about my cause because I cared about it. And I told stories. I told stories about my visits to the villages, my work with the people. And when we were trying to launch a website, I just started, you know, instant messaging friends. I wasn't into Twitter. Sorry, guys. I am now, but I wasn't then. And I'd instant message people and say, hey, you know, we're trying to do this. Do you have the skill? And, you know, I was amazed by how many friends of mine and they're through their networks came to me. So it's informal, but, you know, with a small nonprofit, and you're just looking for people who care about your cause, like you, and care about you, to want to provide, you know, the support, then I think that's one of the best ways to reach volunteers and get them to help you out.
Through these different campaigns, I've connected with complete strangers who are interested in Cambodia and want to help out. So I've hooked them up with different people and have also got them to help me in fundraising. The big problem is, you know, getting into the, quote, office of the organization of which I'm on the board is hard because these people are coming from all over the world. So it's mostly virtual volunteering. And it's part of the relationship building, because I think if people are willing to give their valuable resource, their money and their time, then that brings them into a stronger level of engagement and caring and willing to turn around and do things that are amazing for you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think one of the opportunities that exists, and we're in the process of working on a few projects, is to take advantage of the volunteers' desire to be involved in a deep way and contribute to the organization over time. And all of our availability is a often highly variable resource. And there's an opportunity to for people who just come in for one big volunteer project a year to keep them connected all year long and extend that dialogue. And we have tools to be able to do that and create volunteer communities that can be sustained online and offline. That's starting to happen.
And that last question, if I can take a crack at it as well, about a third of our clients are nonprofit, and what we typically see in community building is to get the volunteers out. One, we all join networks on Facebook, and we tend to join them by geography or by education where we've physically been near people. And I would suggest taking that organization offline. Like NetSquared has meetups at a pub. Dr. Sketchy meets at a place to do the drawing. So there's a series of getting them into the real physical world. So, and with that, I know we're out of time, so I want
to... Can I just make one point also in answer to that question? I just wrote a book about how nonprofits are using Web2 to recruit, mobilize, and organize young people. So I looked at hundreds of nonprofits and have all the examples here.
What's the name of the book?
It's called Mobilizing Generation 2.0. Beth contributed an article.
Yeah, you want to do a book giveaway on my blog?
What's that?
You want to do a book giveaway on my blog?
For sure. It's coming out April 11th, but I have flyers too.
Okay,
definitely.
One last thought, guys. Real quick, on the name of the panel, it was Pimp My Nonprofit. We did that. It was a great name, and it got us a panel at South by Southwest. There was a lot of debate about the name of the panel, so I want to assure you, hopefully, the panelists have created some real value, and I want to emphasize that we take those issues very, very seriously. Secondarily, there's little orange cards. You don't have to fill them out right now, but please do fill out the evaluations, because that'll let them know that there is a strong nonprofit group, and what we'd love to see is some more panels next year. And with that, we'll be available for questions.